Hello.
Hi, Nicole. It's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm great. Sorry, I'm late. Congressman Alan Grayson was on the phone.
I am happy to take a back seat to Alan Grayson.
Cool. Oh, I think am I hearing myself from your computer?
You are. I just turned it off.
Ah, cool. Perfect. Okay. Let's do our segue here. It's the cheesy version of Fool on the Hill, because this segment is Fools on the Hill. We cut our time short, so we'll get right into it. Nicole Bell writes for Crooks and Liars, and she and the gang over there watch those Sunday talking head shows, so I don't have to anymore. I'll tell you, they're getting harder and harder to watch.
They really are, aren't they? It's gotten to the point where the video team and I, we have these little conversations back, privately, where we're like, okay, do we have to watch? We know what he's going to say, right? But just record it. We'll deal with it later. Somebody doesn't have to watch it right now and, knock their head against the keyboard.
Right.
This is what people, the national dialogue is formed by. And so it is important that we are aware of how things are being framed and how politicians come on and spin their positions, their platforms, and to make sense of all of that and hopefully get through that all of that spin and garbage and junk to the essence of what they're saying.
Okay. Yes. To all of that. Chris Matthews, I guess, was on vacation last week, but he did his show, the Chris Matthews Show, both weekends. And, some of the questions that are asked are just ludicrous. I mean, one you didn't even get to in this week's rundown, and I'll mention this and then we'll move on. But on Meet the Press, David Gregory actually asked Mitch McConnell if he believes that Barack Obama is a Muslim. Seriously? And Mitch McConnell said, I take the president on his word on that one. Like, seriously? I mean, he could have said that's nonsense. People need to get over it. But, oh, I'll take the president on his word.
No, I mean, this is, I'm going to refer back to my colleague John Amato and David Nywert's book, Over the Cliff. This is a very calculated campaign to continually paint President Obama as the other to be feared. Really, Muslim is code for the N-word.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way
right.
to get around
you're
that.
Right.
That is what they're doing, and they're going to continue to do it because as long as they can delegitimize him, dehumanize him, then they will continue to do so because they know that there are enough people out there with lizard brains who respond to it.
It's so sad. So, so let's move on. So Chris Matthews, well, here, let me just play a little bit of the clip. I'm not going to play the whole thing because it was pretty long-winded, as he usually is. But here we go.
We put it to the Matthews meter, 12 of our regulars. Will the Tea Partiers have a veto over the 2012 nominee? The meter split, I hate these, 6-6. Gloria, you're a member and you voted no.
I think it's a long way between now and 2012. Let's see how they do in the midterm elections. Let's see where independent voters are. Independent voters are beginning to criticize the Tea Party more and more. I believe you can have a nominee, a presidential nominee in the Republican Party, who does not adhere to every tenet of the Tea Party.
All right. I'm not even going to let her. I don't even know who she was. Some Republican strategist or something.
Gloria Borger writes for, she writes for one of the Washington papers.
Okay. All right. But so he asks his panel if the Tea Party will have veto power over the 2012 GOP nominee. It's just a ridiculous question, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not even through midterms, and we're already looking ahead to count on this huge influence of the Tea Party for the 2012 election.
Exactly.
It's absurd, especially because if you look at it, despite all of the media's fascination with the Tea Party, if you look at what they've accomplished electorally, not very impressive.
No.
And so why they think that influence will grow when they seem to be splintered and fractured and not very cohesive a group, I'm not really clear. I think that the Chris is just thrilled by the Tea Party movement because anything political just moves him.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be right or wrong. It just has to be political. And so he does. He just deals with it strictly on that kind of reactionary basis, and then posits out absurdly long into the 2012 elections, which I just think is silly. Let's see how the Gloria's right. Let's see how they do in the midterms. And based on what I'm looking at, they're not going to do that well.
No, exactly. Well, that's why I said the whole question was just ludicrous. I mean, why didn't he ask something about the midterms, which is at least coming up in a few months, and we're in primary season now? But you know, Sarah Palin is the the queen Tea Partier, and it seems like most of the people she's endorsing are losing. So.
Exactly.
If anything, the Tea Party is going to, when I'm looking at them, I think they're the best gift to the Democrats ever because they're going to be the spoilers here.
Oh, I think so. And I think you see that like in the Rand Paul election. I think there are some genuine conservative-minded voters in Kentucky who cannot bring themselves to vote for Rand Paul.
Absolutely right. No, and
so
that's
you're
why
see,
Jack Conway has a shot at winning.
Right. So, you know, for that reason, I think, yeah, this is just dumb positing. This is navel-gazing on the part of the Beltway, which is unnecessary. And, you know, when you look at people, the most visible Tea Party candidate, Sharon Engel, Rand Paul, you look and they're struggling right now. I think that, you know, predicting any sort of success on the part of the Tea Party in 2012 is absurd. And it was funny to me that Chris Matthews was just so upset that it was an evenly split vote. Somehow this was a slam dunk on the part of the Tea Party.
Yeah, and again, I thought it was ludicrous. The Sharon Engel is the perfect example because had Sue Loudon, the chicken lady, won, although on the surface she seemed crazier because of the chicken comment, she was the mainstream Republican candidate, and Harry Reid would have had a much tougher fight against her. The only reason he got a second life is because he's running against Sharon Engel, who's a teabagger. You know,
exactly.
Okay, let's move on. Howard Dean was on with Candy Crowley, who at least asked about the midterms.
If this is the time to put that stuff behind us,
so let me back up and set up the question. She asked about what he thought would happen in the midterms, basically.
If this is the time to put that stuff behind us, we've got to win this election, and after the election's over, we'll go back to having our policy fights, but this is about winning. You can't get anything done unless you have a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic House, and the Republicans have proved it. They're the party of no. They haven't had a single constructive, name one, anybody who's watching this show, name one single constructive political initiative that the Republicans have put forward. And when finally somebody did put forward one, Paul Ryan, he was lionized for 3 days and then abandoned by the Republicans because he wanted to privatize Social Security and Medicare. Name one thing that you could hope for from the Republicans if they should win this. That is not a winning strategy.
I mean, it's hard to argue with this. I mean, I will say he made the correct framing of it at the beginning. Name one constructive political program that the Republicans will achieve versus what they will do when they win, which I promise you will be investigation after investigation after investigation, which will make Whitewater seem like child's play, you know, and more obstruction. They'll try to, you know, get rid of health care reform such as it is. Their entire policy will be, or their entire platform is a political destruction. That's all that they will do. So, he's right. Name a constructive thing that the Republicans will do for the American people, and you can't do it.
No, you can't, because they haven't laid out anything. They haven't said anything except they want to, you know, undo what the Democrats have done.
Right, and I think that, you know, I know the general conventional wisdom is that Americans are very very short-sighted and tend not to remember that long. But, you know, honestly, the Bush administration was not that long ago. Undoing what little change we've already gotten, is not going to be a big seller.
No, not at all.
When you remember what happened when they were in charge last time.
No, and the thing is, even though you know, the benefits of healthcare reform haven't kicked in, what few benefits are left in the bill that we finally got. But the public opinion is turning on it, where a majority of people now support it now that it's there. How can you say, okay, we're going to make it so that if your kid has a pre-existing condition, your insurance company can now drop them? Hello?
Right.
Not going to work. So, and they haven't come forth.
I think that, you know, as much as the media likes to talk about this being, you know, a game changer, and the conventionalism is that the party in power will go out of power in a midterm, I do think that we're not going to lose the seats that the media likes to predict. I really do.
Because if you look
at the matchups side by side, the incumbents versus the Tea Party candidates or the Republican challengers, the challengers aren't looking that good.
Nope. No, you're absolutely right. And as Alan Grayson just, you know, ran down the people who are running against him, one of this motley crew of idiots is going to win the primary tomorrow and be his opponent. And you know, when you look at the people that are out there, and again, they have nothing constructive to offer. There's no there.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Dick Armey has a new book out, and he is making the rounds. And so, here's what he had to say on Meet the Press.
Back in 2001, after the 9/11 attacks, you went to the floor, and you were outspoken, saying that there are Muslims around the world, Arabs, who are as horrified as U.S. citizens, that we ought to treat them with equal respect and decent treatment. In that vein, do you think it's a wise decision to have the mosque here as a sign of living our values?
I believe the folks that want to build the mosque here are making an unwise decision. But I think when I look at the 18% of the American people that are enthusiastic about this grassroots movement, we see this as, while it's an important issue, it's an issue that ought not to be distracting the president from the critical issues of unemployment, fiscal responsibility, a nation headed for bankruptcy, and the larger issues that affect the future of our children make this issue pale on the question of, should the president be sticking up for the Constitution? Mm-hmm. Our folks say, well, great, I love him sticking up for the Constitution. We should have done that on Medicare, where in fact he trashed the Constitution in the view of most of our folks. And in terms of him being here and then there, it reflects again our fear that this president is whimsical, doesn't really quite know where he is on any subject, even the larger subjects that are driving our folks in the street trying to make change in America.
Now, does David Gregory ever challenge him on any of this stuff?
Not a bit. No, no, no. We don't want to challenge a politician or a politico. We don't want to actually make the back up and say, hold on, did you just say that Medicare trashes the Constitution? And then again, that's the failure of David Gregory. And for the life of me, I don't know what there can be done about him, because he is so pathetic. But that he let Dick Armey go ahead and claim that Medicare trashes the Constitution as far as their members are concerned is bad. But the fact that he doesn't allow Jennifer Granholm, who was on at the same time, to respond was even worse.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's why I don't watch it. And I you know, I just heard that clip, and it's like, all right, Dick is an army of one. The Dick Armey. He's just useless, and he's out promoting his book. And I saw Jennifer Granholm sitting there as I'm dubbing this clip, and didn't say anything. And why David Gregory has that job, I don't know. Why don't they give it to Rachel Maddow?
Yeah, I can't understand. And would that he just simply say, okay, Mr. Armey, could you just explain, are you suggesting that senior citizens should be required to go out and get jobs to help pay for their Alzheimer's treatment?
Right, exactly.
What exactly is he saying? It's an absurd thing to say. In fact, if anything, I think Medicare is actually in the spirit of the Constitution, because the Constitution guarantees us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as a senior, I'm not clear what Dick Armey thinks they should be doing.
And what did Obama do
for their health care?
And what did Obama do to Medicare that trashes the Constitution? I don't get that either.
I don't get that either. Other than I think there is talk about raising the age, which, you know, I have problems with.
No, there was talk about lowering the age before Joe Lieberman screwed that up.
Right. And actually, I would have, you know, for me, the sensible thing is we have the infrastructure there. When we're talking health care, we just open up Medicare for all.
Yes.
So that every American is guaranteed a certain basic level of health care. And then, you know, you can purchase additional supplemental
right.
insurance to raise your, you know, to raise the level or to focus on specific things if you have, you know, pre-existing conditions or, you know, family, what's the word I want to use? You know, like family histories of certain
right,
things.
Right, pre-existing conditions, and right.
So, you know, to me, there are ways that Medicare should be used for the country. How that trashes the Constitution, I'm still completely lost by. But, of course, nobody ever confronts Army with that and asks him.
Horrible. All right. Let's move on. One of the few people who is reasonable on Sunday mornings is Fareed Zakaria over on CNN.
First, wanted to draw your attention to something else that's been going on in Pakistan in recent months. This is an Al-Qaeda triple suicide bombing from July, killing 42 and injuring 175. What's strange is that the attack took place at a site of Muslim prayer. You might call it a mosque, just before prayer time. Why would Al-Qaeda attack a holy place at a time of prayer? Because it is a Sufi shrine, part of a sect that Al-Qaeda despises and regards as a deadly foe in the real battle it is fighting, the battle within Islam. The Sufis are a sect of Islam originating in South Asia. They are all about mysticism, love, brotherhood, and devotion with very little attention to dogma. They believe in saints, shrines, music, dance, and follow a very liberal interpretation of the Quran. Sufi poets routinely extol the virtues of wine and song, both forbidden in the purer versions of Islam. Sufism has always believed in tolerance towards other people and religion and in peace. You can see why Al-Qaeda views it as its mortal enemy. The more Muslims accept some version of Sufi Islam, the more dangerous for Al-Qaeda and its extreme jihadist philosophy.
So, you know, and what he's talking about is the sect, if you will, the same Sufi sect of Muslims who want to build this community center two big blocks away from the site of the World Trade Center.
Right, 4,000 feet from the World Trade Center. I believe somebody from Media Matters actually pulled out a measurement and came up with that. It's 4,000 feet away. I mean, this is the thing. If we want to show that we are a tolerant people, that we are not terrorized, that we embrace cultures and embrace all, including Muslims, the best thing we could possibly do is to support the Park 51 site.
Yes.
Because otherwise, we are on the side of Al-Qaeda. We are right there with them, being intolerant, being unwilling to hear their side, being unwilling to bridge and understand the differences between them. And it's bothersome to me that, you know, I don't know if you, I think everyone knows Bush didn't know prior to the invasion of Iraq that there were different sects of Islam. He did not understand that there were Sunni versus Shia.
Right, I remember
and
that.
And even
right.
though there have been centuries of warfare between the two, he wasn't aware of that. But once that was explained to him, he really did try during his presidency to temper that kind of rhetoric, to say we are not at war with Islam.
Yeah, and but you know what? George W. Bush could do a lot right now if he came out and said, look, you're being unreasonable here. And talk about how this imam from Rauf worked with his administration in trying to, you know, bring people together. But he's being eerily silent.
Yes, he is. And actually, many of the people on the Bush administration have been. There have been a couple who have come out and said that, you know, you guys are embarrassing us, don't do this. But again, this is the perfect opportunity for the Republicans to appeal to the lizard brain of very fearful voters. So they conflate the two. They don't make the distinction between the Sufis and the Wahhabist Al-Qaeda, which is one of the more fringe groups of the Sunni tribe of Islam versus the Sufi, which are more the more mystical version of the Shia version of Islam. It gets very confusing. I'm trying not confuse, be clear on that. So I apologize if that sounded
right,
weird.
But all you have to do is listen to Zakaria's statement right there. And, you know, the fact that Al-Qaeda blew up a Sufi mosque, because they don't like them. They do not believe in them. They do not want this group to grow within Islam.
Right. So that's why we need to take a stand and say, absolutely, we need this cultural center. We need to show that as Americans, we cannot be bowed by Al-Qaeda. We will not allow them to make us step back from our inclusion, from our tolerance. And it's just really heartbreaking to me to see how perverted the whole this whole controversy has become. And you know, and it's been driven by Fox News and Glenn Beck and Drudge and all those. And it really, to me, it becomes completely un-American. The whole argument is completely un-American.
I agree, so, and that's what who came out and said this today? I'm drawing a blank. Former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel.
Chuck Hagel did. I know Joe Scarborough did.
Oh, and
too.
Joe Scarborough definitely
on Morning
did.
Soap.
Yes, which actually surprised the hell out of me. Yep. All right.
Every once in a while has sense.
Yep. Yeah, I got you. Oh, no, it was Chuck Hagel who was endorsing a Democrat over a Republican. Sorry, it's all coming together. It's all jamming together in my mind. Chuck Hagel did something I know what it was. He endorsed Joe Sestak over Pat Toomey is what it was.
Oh, great.
Yes. And it was Joe Scarborough who said those things about the mosque. And good for him. Good for him.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, this is one thing that I think really kind of separates liberals from conservatives for the most part is the conservative mindset, authoritarian mindset, sort of demands that they just follow whoever the authority figure is. Liberals, I would like to think, stand up for what's right, even if it means going against who our putative leaders are.
Yes.
So,
well, we do that all the time. Thus the
exactly.
Professional left meme. You know, thus the disconnect between the progressive movement and the White House.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think they wish that we were a little more authoritarian, but
yeah, of course.
Unfortunately, that's not the way it's going to work.
Not at all. Nicole Bell is with us from Crooks and Liars. I'm Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com, also heard at TalkRadio1.com and on a tape delay at SoFloRadio.com here in South Florida. It's our weekly Fools on the Hill segment. All right. Now, George Will, and again, why they keep calling him back, I don't know. But George Will thinks that the Mideast peace process is the biggest obstacle to Mideast peace. Unbelievable.
They've announced today that there will be talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians, direct talks for the first time in 20 months. Now, that's got to be good, George.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Now, George.
You can argue that the peace process is the biggest threat to peace in Palestine.
You can also argue that process is better than no process.
That is what I'm precisely arguing against. The fact is, 19 years ago, almost a generation ago, we had a big hullabaloo because in Madrid in 1991, the Palestinians and the Israelis engaged in direct talks. 19 years later, we're doing it again. Here's what we don't agree on. Mr. Abbas has not said that Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state for the Jewish people.
He recognizes Israel's right to exist.
Not as a Jewish state for the Jewish people. He's been asked dozens of times to say it and never has, and I suspect never will, partly because he believes in a right of return.
And actually, I had to cut the clip there because the sound went out on the clip. Yeah, but anyway, you said you agree with part of what he's saying, though.
I agree that the discussion for Mideast peace at this point will not be productive unless the U.S. Gets honest about the agendas. And I gave you a link, and if you'd be so kind as to put it up on your site later, that people can follow it.
I absolutely will.
But Netanyahu was caught on tape basically admitting that he had no interest and no desire to follow the Oslo Accords, and that he knew that America would never do anything about it. And so I think, you know, Will focuses on the Palestinians' refusal to accept that Israel has a right to exist. I think he's being a little harsh, one, on the Palestinians, but two, he's also only looking at one side of it. Israel has very clearly, Netanyahu has very clearly said that he has absolutely no desire to negotiate with the Palestinians, and he's just willing to wait it out.
I got you. But it's not the peace process is not the biggest obstacle to Mideast peace. The biggest obstacle is is probably Netanyahu.
It is. I mean, both sides have their own intransigent positions.
Yes.
They, you know, and I think that that is not constructive for peace talks. But I think that the U.S. specifically, because we're involved in this, needs to be honest with ourselves and with Israel about what their agenda is, because what they say to us to our face and what they say behind closed doors are two separate things.
You're absolutely
right. And we don't
right.
even bother to talk to the Palestinians about it. So, you know, without Israel being there. So, you know, I think there's a lot of intellectual dishonesty involved in this thing that needs to be resolved before any sort of real constructive peace talks can occur.
I agree. All right. And finally, Faux News does it. You know, they do something every week. They bring on Judith Miller to discuss the study that American people have lost faith in broadcast news. Here's a little bit of that.
Maybe this has to do with the trust in the media, which is our next topic, which according to the latest figures from Gallup, America's confidence in newspapers and television news is at its lowest since 1990. No more than 25% of Americans say they have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in either. Wow, what do those numbers say?
But almost as slow as Congress.
Yeah. And
the public is very wise. They shouldn't trust us. I mean, you should use the tweak the Reagan adage, don't trust and verify when it comes to anything you see
in
the
media. Yes, but where do you verify when there are fewer and fewer media outlets capable of sending out reporters to actually get the facts that all of our opinions are based on?
Well, there's two categories. There's news gathering and there's opinion. As I was saying in the first segment, look, I think the liberal punditariat, if you will, just prizes itself on being isolated, which means that they appeal to 10% of the country, Ellis, and the other 90% just dismisses them.
And what does that say about basic Woodward Bernstein type news?
Well,
gathering?
That's a different category. The news gathering is different. When you think of the media, you really think of loudmouth commentators and columnists and pundits sneering at ordinary Americans.
Gee, I used to think about Woodward
and
Bernstein.
He's not talking about you, Al. Don't take it personally.
I think everyone at this table may qualify for that a little bit. But, I mean, in the end, though, if you don't have people out gathering the facts, those opinions are going to be considerably stupider, as is
all of our nation. You can get the facts if you go out, if you consult enough media sources, you can
get the facts. All right, well, but don't trust the Internet, because you need reporters. That's my one man's tech.
Don't trust the Internet, because you need reporters. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's coming from someone on Fox.
Right. Now, who was that guy? I didn't even know who he was.
Let's not lose sight of Fox News telling us, don't trust the Internet.
Right.
Because, you know, how many stories can we come up with in the next 2 minutes that have been generated and created by Fox that don't really have any basis in reality, right? I mean, starting with the Cordova House Park 51 Center.
Yep.
And then the absolute hubris to have the woman that the Bush White House actually fed propaganda to drum up support for the invasion of Iraq, when we all knew that Iraq posed no threat to us. You know, that's just astounding to me. I mean, those are some seriously brass-plated gonads we're talking about.
Yeah, but they don't seem to care. I mean, they just spout stuff. It is total just fabrication, everything they do over there.
Right, and then they look at each other and go, well, gosh, why don't the public trust the media? And you're like, you know, and the telling thing was that there was a, even they conflate opinion media with news gathering. Because at Fox, that's all it is. It's all opinion media.
Yes.
You know, disguised as news gathering, but it's not news.
No.
And that's exactly why the American people don't trust. How many times did we hear all these horrible things about Saddam Hussein before, you know, before they invaded Iraq? And how many people believe, how many Fox News viewers believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11?
Probably most of them, because that's what they were told.
Yep. Right. Yep. And when you find out the truth, why would you trust that source ever again?
Good, very good question. I think it's what they want to believe. You know, they want to believe Glenn Beck, and so they'll keep going back, even though it's been proven over and over again that all he does is lie. But that's what they do.
Yep.
Yep. All right, we are just about out of time. How's the nephew?
He's doing as well as can be expected. I don't know if you told your listeners,
he
was born with a heart condition. And so he will be having surgery this week, to correct it. And we're hoping that everything goes well and that he'll be out of the hospital in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Everybody, please give us good thoughts that this little guy will fight it through.
Absolutely. All right. Nicole Bell from crooksandliars.com. I will put up links I'll put up links to most of the stories that we discussed tonight on my blog at radioornot.com, and I will talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. And,
bye.
Bye. And that does it for us for tonight. Tomorrow I'll be back with Gotta Laugh from the politicalcarnival.net, Cliff Schechter, and, whatever else the day brings. Thanks for listening. I'm Nicole Sandler, Radio or Not. Bye.
It's the Nicole Sandler Show, Radio or Not.